There are so many women out there that are taking a stand against gender inequality and are paving the way for the future generation. Ordinary women that are creating a more inclusive and powerful society, free from stereotypes, racism and sexism. And I'm here to share their stories with all of you. Stay tuned, because this is WEN Power, your source of inspiring, powerful and positive stories. And I'm here to discover how we can change the narrative, one story at a time. I am your host, Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of WEN Power. Hello and welcome to a new episode of WEN Power podcast. We are here today with Ariane Barnes, British-Mauritian queer artist producer and founder of the Different Women Project. She's here today to share with us her story and tell us a bit more about her journey as a founder and the mission and vision behind the Different Women Project. Thank you, Ariane, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ilaria, at WEN Power. It's such a privilege. Thank you so much.
Let's jump straight into this interview. Yes. So I got a very nice first question for you that I love to ask to every guest on my podcast. And it's, Ariane, what is that you fighting for today?
The Different Women Project, originally I founded because I want to help women feel seen and heard and uplifted, and to help them come into a community where they're supported. And that those women are often women from marginalized backgrounds that suffer prejudice, either racial or because of their gender identification. And I am fighting for those women to have a safe place to come, to be seen and heard, and also to develop their skills.
It's an interesting and beautiful fight, and very much needed. I mean, can we say that it's a beautiful fight? I'm not too sure, but I think it's
the people are beautiful.
People are beautiful, so they deserve us to fight for them, right?
Absolutely.
I will like to start from the beginning of your of your career and to discover a little bit more how your experience and your upbringing shape you into the person you are today, and how did you came to, you know, to that light bulb moment where you decided, okay, this is the moment for me to create the Different Women Project. So should we start with this?
Yes, let's do that. I mean, for those of you, obviously you can't see me, I'm nodding vigorously because I'm remembering those times and how that journey has come about. And I think, you know, really young, I was born in Britain, but I was raised here for the first 7 years. And then I moved to Mauritius with my family. And both of my parents were naturalized British, but originally from Mauritius. So, you know, I grew up speaking several languages in the home. And like most kids, you know, I found some kind of passion, and mine demonstrated itself as dancing to Madonna and posing in my little plastic chair. And I think, you know, even at that age, I was born to perform. I was born to get that exuberance out into the world. I'm an introvert, really, but as when it comes to, you know, my skill, it's definitely outward facing and relational. And I think when I got to Mauritius, I was about 9. I did my first acting job. A corporate job. I did some modeling as well, quite young. And then after that, I fell into island life, I think, you know, which is very different pace and view of the world than this is. So I was a typical 14-year-old mixed race girl in Mauritius, you know, because in Mauritius, being multiracial is the norm, you know, because it's an African diaspora country. And so most of us are born with this hugely varied background. And so for me, that was very normal at this point, you know. And really, it wasn't until I came back to England here with my mother that my view of the world started to change. Probably wasn't helped by the fact that that started in Mansfield, Nottingham. So it was kind of a baptism of fire, you know? And at that point, I began to experience prejudice. I began to experience prejudice on all sorts of levels about my sexuality. I always knew I was fluid, and someone that I identify as, I'm a cisgendered woman, by the way, for anyone wondering. My pronouns are she, her. But I've always been very fluid when it comes to my sexual identity. And I could already see that that was at odds with the world and with society. And then you add race into that. And then you add the fact that this kid has, traveled the world already, quite young, speaks several languages, has an opinion. It became a difficult space to exist in. And I think my relationship with performance was affected when I trained at drama school, because again, I was the only one. And it's that feeling of always being the outsider and having that reflected back to you as though it's your fault, when really the reality is that it's society that's sort of set up to see you fail, because it's not set up for the 99%, as we would call it in business, right? It's a different way of looking at it. And so going really into my performance career, I can't say it any other way than I just began to experience this again and again in different ways. So whether it was a script that I was reading, or who would see me for audition and who wouldn't, and once I got in the room, how I was treated there, how I was treated, depending on how straight my hair was that day, what foundation I was wearing, how well I was expressing myself, how eloquent my English was. So I think all of those things drew together, and then finally, I think in 2014, when the Oscars So White happened, this great big movement that we had to really try to increase diversity in the performance industry, I sort of woke up and went, okay, I need to do something about this. I have all of these wonderful gifts. I'm a gifted speaker. I've got the training. What can I do with it now? And I decided to set up Different Women, and I kind of haven't looked back since.
Well, some part do resonate with me. I'm an island girl too. I come from Sardinia,
There we
a little bit
go.
like a tiny, tiny island in Italy. And then you come here to the UK, completely different world. And I totally agree with you what you say. And because we look at that from a business perspective, we are that 1%, and we try to create something that will make a whole. For the society, for people to be represented, to be seen, to be heard. So I find a lot of similarities with your story and what we are doing with Wempower, and it's like I'm even more excited to have you here today. You told us a bit about your light bulb, and mostly actually the reason why you decided to create a Different Women project, and you never looked back since. So do you want to tell us how it evolved in the years, how your business grew, and also I know that you're running also this Diversity Warriors Embodied DEI Consultancy and the Warrior Women Like Me Empowerment Program. So would you like to tell us a bit about that as well?
Sure. So I decided to fuse all of my skills, performance, mindfulness, meditation, yoga, rhetoric, speaking, the ability to connect the mind and body together so that I could help women to stand tall and strong in their craft. And that's really a pathway to inner transformation and therefore leadership, personal and professional. And I kind of funneled those passions into creating those two programs. So the Diversity Warriors program is really about empowering people to make change from the inside out and the top down. So to unpick that a little bit more, what I mean is that change starts with the self. And when it comes to diversity, access, equity, and inclusion, I think the emphasis is still on numbers and quotas and how we can make things better on the surface quickly. at speed, but not really looking at the qualitative measures that need to be put in place, the systemic change that needs to start happening if we want to embody, you know, change. And we hear that word a lot in the wellness world, embodiment, you know, but what does it mean in practice when it comes to this diversity, access, equity, inclusion work? So Diversity Warriors is a program that takes us through our own, holds a mirror, I would say, up to our own prejudices and our own experiences and how we relate to the world so that we can change from the inside out and then apply that to the systems that we're in and just walk a greater path of authenticity and then create that change that sort of lasts, you know, that's really multi-level. And then the second program, Warrior Women Like Me, is a lot more joyful. It's a big community celebration where we bring together stellar artists, teachers, live music, and we do that through the diaspora arts. So we have, you know, typically African or Asian music playing and musicians. I would teach African or Indian dance. We will have yoga. And then there's also mentorship and yoga psychology built into that because I teach performance and advanced yoga psychology. So these kind of programs are much more engaged to the community that really we need to serve right now. It's great to create the top-down change, which we do on the corporate side. And then also for corporate and community, we're looking at creating those spaces so that women can feel seen and heard. And all of our practitioners really identify as women of color and or queer. So it's a positive, it's an affirmative action statement in that way because, you know, it's still not representative of the industry. So we try and bring all of that together and just empower women to walk away feeling stronger, knowing they're not by themselves. It's that, you know, you were talking about the things that you can relate to. You know, it's very difficult for, I mean, yes, we're doing a podcast now and we're talking about it and that's great, but how long has it taken for us to get to the point where we're able to openly discuss these things and come together with like-minded individuals? So Different Women, I would say, as an organization, is a shortcut to all of that, you know, so it does that for the community and it also does that for the corporate entities if they're interested in doing it. Have I answered your question? I hope that does.
Definitely,
it.
Yes. Okay. Definitely. And is there any particular experience that shaped you into the person you are today and help you to, you know, to build this level of resilience, because in the end it's resilience that is pushing you through your projects and combining the heart world with community, which is not something that, you know, it's very easy to do.
It's interesting because you kind of looked at it as a almost, you painted me a holistic picture there. That's how I felt. You know, what's the holism behind this? What's the bigger picture here? And for me, I think it is very much so every part of my personality, because, you know, when you're multiracial and you're queer, and I also have an invisible disability, by the way, I'm a type 1 diabetic. So when you're born with all of that, but you don't necessarily know that it makes you different until it gets pointed out in a not very positive way. you sort of, yes, you build the resilience, but it takes a long time for you to sort of let it sink in. Hang on a minute. It doesn't have to be this way. I don't have to be spoken to like this or treated like this. I don't have to stay quiet about these things if I want to change them. You know, I don't have to stay in a situation that isn't good for me. All of those things, I think, become a lot more obvious to you if you are experiencing this kind of trifecta of prejudice on a daily basis, you know. But if we're talking about a moment, because I know you did ask that, my dark night of the soul, I auditioned for a very big show that went well on the West End for quite a while. And I met a director that I had always wanted to meet. And they told me that they found me funny. And that was very rare. It's very rare in these auditions, you know, that you get any kind of personal feedback straight from the director. And, you know, they looked at me and they were female. And they were also a woman of color. And they said I was funny. And then I was so happy about that. And then the second time when I came round for the callback, there'd been a miscommunication. So my agent hadn't prepared me, and it turned out I walked in dolled up to the nines, thinking that I was going to play a particular part, and I was auditioning for a particular part. And it turned out they were seeing me for an auntie, which was a completely different role. So I completely had to improvise around my material. And despite all of that, I still managed to pull it out of the bag. I was very nervous, but I still managed to pull it out of the bag. And at this point, the director, who, as a fellow woman of color, very rare that you get, a woman of color director in the room with you, said to me, "So if I were looking at a map of India, could you point where you're from?" I know. And at this point, I really understood in my bones that I would be facing this prejudice from not just from white people, from my own community, from people that didn't know what to do with me because I was multiracial, my whole life. And I think I fell into quite a deep depression after that. It was really difficult because I went from feeling like, okay, it's a grind as a performer. We all go through these things. That's the industry, blah, 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 to hang on a minute. This is really messed up. Do I really want this? Do I really want to keep fighting this system? And if I do that, how do I take care of me? So all of a sudden, and then, the Oscars so white thing happened, and I was like, right, that's it. It's time to make a change. And then the feedback coming from those workshops that I was starting to give to, theatre companies, mainly small community centres, people like that, and then drama schools as well in the UK. Then I started to get positive feedback, and they started to say, I started to sort of realise the extent of the issue. Sort of, I had teachers crying at me because they felt like it was safe to cry. I had students going, "I have never seen someone like me on stage before." I had, there was all sorts of things going on at the time. So I think that was the defining moment that just made me think, perhaps there is strength in working from my wound, which in the wellness world we call this working with the wounded healer archetype, or the wounded warrior. And for me, that's it. The wounded warrior thing really stuck, and I thought, okay, I've always felt, Xena Warrior Princess was she was my idol.
I love that too. When I was
Yes.
little, I used to watch it a lot after lunch with my sister.
I mean,
That
I would sit there as a kid, as a teenager, just watching, the marathons on a Saturday on Channel 5. They used to do like, the marathons, like kind of
Yeah.
omnibus or whatever it is that they called it. And I just absolutely loved that idea of fierceness and what it meant to be fierce. And I like martial arts. And so then I thought, okay, all of this, there's a common thread to this story. How do I make this story mine, and how do I make it so that other women can benefit from the experiences that I've had, so that they're not feel, they don't feel so crushed, and they feel much more happy and confident, sort of speaking truth to power and being happy in their own mental, emotional, and physical bodies.
I'm really sorry to hear that there are still situations like this happening, and people are, just too quickly jump into conclusion and try to put us like in boxes, into labels, into, places, just probably a bit to satisfy their ego or to satisfy their knowledge. I don't know what it is, but even for me as a foreigner, sometimes I don't have the same problem, but I'm still an Italian living in London, and sometimes, you hear some funny comments, and once or twice you can let it go. On the third time, you'll be like, okay, yeah, that's not so funny anymore. And it's really important that women like you are creating safe spaces for other women and for other people in general to feel safe in their own unique way and in their, expression of intersectionalities. You touch a bit this, and my next question is more in regards to diversity and inclusion in the arts, and more specifically, if we want to look at it from a woman perspective, a female perspective, but also from, LGBTQ plus community. You've been in the art worlds and in the creative worlds for so long. Have you noticed any positive change? What is there still needs to be done, and what is the actual picture, you know, like the real picture of when it comes to diversity and inclusion in the performative arts?
So let me try and, because there's three big questions there. Let me go
Yeah,
back.
we can.
So firstly, you said, have I observed any change, right? So that's, I have observed change. I have observed, and I think 2013, 14 was when things really started to change in the UK landscape. We started to become a bit more aware. There were projects actually set up by actors, ironically, because they were the most disempowered of the bunch in performance. You know, directors, casting directors have a lot of power. So actors are constantly working to reclaim their power. And I refuse to say that actors don't have power because that's not true. You know, one of the things I'm also originally, I think, started fighting for was people to understand that it's just a lie. You do have power, but it's how it's daring to be bold, to be courageous, to stand up for yourself enough to, because I think as an actor, I think the main issue that you face is you just don't know where your next meal is coming from for a really long time, you know. And I'm not exaggerating. You sometimes literally don't know whether there's going to be food provided, which is where you get the, you know, the stereotype of actors filling their bags with food at buffets, you know. It's not quite that bad, but the change that I have seen, it's been incremental. It has been too slow, and I think a lot of people feel that way. But definitely, when it comes to, I think black representation is very slowly starting to inch up the hill, which is brilliant because at the time in 2013, 14, it was a massive, massive issue, and there was also a lot of infighting as well, and you know. People don't like us talking about this. Some people don't like it, but you know, there was division between the East Asian and the black community, for example, and that was demonstrated by the Oscar So White issue. And then, sort of, you know, white people seem to be on another shore entirely. So it seems like over the years, everything's just calmed down a bit, and we're now in a place where we're being more mindful with our language. We're asking each other how we feel more. We're beginning to set up structures where our well-being is also taken into account. Because one of the most punishing things that we experience as performers is our time is taken for granted. You know, a working day is often 10 till 10. If you're working on a movie, you could be inside a tin box for that amount of time. And some of that time you'll be on camera, some of that time you'll be waiting. If you're in theatre, it's marginally better, but you might be doing three shows a day. With for little to no money, you know. So I think in terms of the working conditions and representation, things are very slowly beginning to change because unions are putting in, you know, I was on the minority ethnic committee for equity for 2 years, and I eventually resigned because I told them, you know, if you don't change something, everyone's going to walk out. And the next year it happened. Everyone walked out. So I was sort of like, ha, you know, when you don't want to be right. So, you know, a lot of that change, I think, was right in the middle of, you know, the George Floyd explosion that happened. People finally saw the state of the world and how tragic it really is when you think about what it looks like, you know, at the extreme end of that scale. I think in terms of what happens now, it's interesting because I think after George Floyd and after the movement for Black Lives really started to hold a bigger space on the world stage, what we saw was change where people started to wake up. But there, you can tell a lot, I think, by the organizations that have really kept it going and created that systemic change as a result, and those that have been quite performative. And so, as a result, you're looking at if you go back to work for those people, nothing has changed. And that's where you know, nothing has changed. And I think your second question was, what still needs to
Yeah,
change? Yeah.
what still needs to be done or to change?
Yeah, I think. With the coronavirus pandemic, for me as a type 1 diabetic, I feel like I was made so aware of my own vulnerability for the first time in a way that I hadn't considered before, because I'd always just fought through whatever I was feeling, going through in rehearsal, whether I was traveling or whatever. And what really stood out to me during that time is that access needs in the performance world are still looked at like a form of leprosy, even though, you might have the insurance in place or you might have a schedule in place. I know it sounds ridiculous, but these things are not necessarily givens. Things like having a lunch break at the right time, that isn't at 2:30 in the afternoon, things like that. Things where we give people an option to just say no, to have an alternative, where we give people alternatives to feel more comfortable in their work routines, to know what would be great for you, actor that turns up, or performer or dancer that turns up and has to be on your feet all day and uses your whole entire body and soul to do what you do? What would be good for you? Those questions I want to see directors, I want to see artistic directors, producers start to ask those questions to their performers, because I guarantee you, when you take care of your people, they will do anything for you. And I've seen that again and again for the people that I would kill to work with again, and they're not necessarily big outfits, but they treated me like a queen, and I reciprocated very naturally anyway. So it's sort of like we need to see more of that, and we need to see it, I think, less from the point of view that it's a chore and more from the point of view as this is my fellow human being that I am asking these things from. How can I help their journey so that we both get what we want? That's the change I want to see happening, especially for women that come from marginalized communities.
And, when it comes to the arts, what's the situation like for the LGBTQ plus community?
I feel as though it's getting better. It's difficult to quantify because I feel as though it's either you're either in a queer play, or you're not. There doesn't seem to be an in-between place. There seem to be a few, and they're very few and far between, sort of queer collectives, and you tend to see them more in the performance art space, less the sort of straight actor space, less the dancer space. Or actually, I think the gay boys have cornered the dance market to a wonderful turn of events. I'm thinking now of the Ballet Trocadero of Monte Carlo, who are brilliant, and they're all male drag queens that dance on point, and it's just, they're amazing. But I think it still feels very either or when it comes to the queer scene in performance. It feels like we're still sort of tucked away in the cabaret and the cute, what we call the cutipoc spaces, the intersectional spaces. And it feels like until you discover those, and they can be very cliquey, by the way. They're not easy to get into either, unless you can sort of, I want to say, sort of, eat fire or balance, chantilly cream on your bum or something. It's almost like you're not interesting enough to fit into those spaces. So we have, there's work to do on both sides. It's never just one side. It's always, from every community. And I just feel like, it's not something that is at the forefront of people's minds. I suppose because in performance, there are so many queer people that just feel freer to exist through the nature of performance being so free and fantastically fluid. But it doesn't feel as though if, for example, you had an agent, you could say to them, "Hey, I would really like to prioritize queer work, or can you only put me up for queer parts?" It doesn't feel yet like we are in a position where we wouldn't, it's not that we would get dismissed, but we would be quietly quitted on. People would say yes, and then, you maybe wouldn't get to to play a queer character for a couple of years because the parts aren't out there in inverted commas. So yeah, that's I think where we are with that at the moment.
This takes me, the next question that we come after this is like really the importance of representation, because it's, I don't know, for me, when I look at the media world of the news, obviously I go quickly to see how women are represented, how many women are journalists are out there, how many women are in, top leadership position, and that was actually puts off many women maybe to join the to get to pursue a career in journalism because they don't see themselves represented. So the question is, how representation is important for you, and what was the added value when it comes to the hard
I
side?
think the value of representation and seeing ourselves represented on screen is that it becomes a possibility to do what we do. So, you mentioned earlier that journalists maybe don't want to come into the media sphere because they don't see themselves represented. I have a colleague that I'm speaking to after I'm speaking to you today called the News Yogi, and she has Guatemalan ancestry, and she specifically works with Black Indigenous people of color around burnout, for example, and how people in the media industry, and when we say media, in this case, I am saying journalism, are much more prone to burnout because also they work at that intersection of everything, the amount of trauma that you're exposed to on a daily basis. And again, it's asking that question, how can I serve this community better? So I think with representation that is almost has its ear to the ground in terms of the reality of being in the media and the performance industry, we then were able to serve that community better. They feel seen, they feel heard, they feel safe to be vulnerable, to be imperfect, to. I mean, I can't tell you, Laria, when I did the Warrior Women Like Me project and I saw that, there were women, there were women cuddling, there were women, that were flirting, there were women that were building wonderful friendships, there were women that came out of the weekend in semi relationships, there were and the ways in which the bonding happened already around the existing relationships and also the hierarchies in the room, some we had different levels of management coming in and everything. That turnout was maybe, I think we did. We reached 85% BIPOC representation in that event, which is extremely rare. And to see people just sit there and allow themselves to be who they are with no apology, allow the tears, allow the laughter, allow the fierceness, allowing themselves to exist and take up space is just the reward is just so all-consuming. You come out of there and you think, this is how it should be. We should be like this all the time. This we should be doing this, on a regular basis, if only the world would facilitate that. But the more we have the spaces that do that, the more people will want to do it. And then the movement grows. And it's so heart-based and kind because of the connections and the authenticity that's built in the room. So it's easy to see representation and visibility as something quite one-dimensional, but actually, once it filters down, that's when we're looking at that top-down change. And so when, when I hear that someone's started an initiative or decided to hire, anyone, any woman of color or queer woman of color in a position of authority, it makes me really, really happy because I know that that means that they want change, but it's also about supporting those people, and that's something that needs to be looked at as well.
It is. Otherwise, they just stick in the box, and they doing that with no manual on how to actually then, once they take the step to be more inclusive, more diverse in whichever field we looked at, if you need to give them some guidance. Otherwise, I think it's just like a routine work for HR to just be like, okay, I think I've done this. I hired that person, and whatever comes after, we'll see. So it's really, really important that the job you do as well doesn't stop in the moment you inspire and plant that seed or that decision into the company minds, and it goes beyond that. So I think it's really, really important. And we are moving towards the end of the interview, so we can go to something a little bit more funny, maybe. I don't know, because I don't know what to expect from this. But is there any short practice or ritual that you would like to share with all the women that are listening to us right now, and that can help them to connect a little bit more with their power, with their, craft?
Sure. So the
Sure.
first thing that I want to say is that on the Different Women Instagram channel, you'll find quite a few of those tiny, short videos of practices that I just share on a regular basis. And I think the main thing that I would love to share is that the authenticity of who you are is expressed through your uniqueness. So the more you put the work in to embracing what makes you A, uniquely different, B, completely joyful and proud, you will then attract what it is that you want in your life. You'll be much more likely, it's that thing of some of the best relationships come along when we're not looking for them. Right. And that's because we're shining. We're at that sort of peak of our best selves, as the culture likes to call it. Right. So I think that authenticity, and it's difficult because it does involve vulnerability, is just really, really important to stay in touch with. And so, yeah, there is a short sort of meditation that I could share with you that's just a few minutes long. So, I am going to invite you to sit tall wherever you're sitting and really root the sit bones into the chair, the floor, wherever you are. And place your palms face down on your knees or your thighs, just so long as they're making contact towards the body, because we're focusing here on channeling the energy inwards. And from that place, just becoming aware of our breath. And with no judgment, just observing where the breath is. Then I'm going to invite you to come to the space that is just above the pubic bone, which is that kind of bowl of the belly there. And this place in the body is the center of joy. And if it helps to place your hands over that place, go ahead and do that. And then sending the breath into that area of the body. So inhaling, feeling that breath, and exhaling, bring the navel to the spine. A few more like that in your own time. Remembering this is where the most authentic place in your body lives, this pleasure center, the center of joy, the things we connect to with passion. And when you're ready, very gently opening your eyes. There we go. So that's just a very short practice. Just a few breaths, taking the time. I can see your face. You look flushed, and which is wonderful for me to see that.
It's like I tried for whoever is listening. I did this exercise live, yeah? So I can assure you it works. No, but it's is at end of the day, very busy, just sitting and breathing and here to your own breath and your own body. I think it's very grounding. And when you say, where do you feel your breath? I felt it here, like, I don't know if the stress of the interview, the pressure of the day, and then you just like went down.
Yeah, so it went from chest to low belly. Yeah, I mean, that's so common, especially for business women. We tend to walk around like we
this.
Have hangers, yeah, with our shoulders around our ears, kind of thing. So it's very, I'm very happy to hear that that's sort of soothed you. But I mean, these kind of central nervous system resets really, really important throughout the day. You know, trying to get one in sort of in between meetings or maybe before you start a new chapter of the day. So I will often do one in the morning and then in between people as well, because I feel as though, you do take on energy, you do take on vibes from people and ways of speaking and all sorts, especially if you're one of those spongy people. Like, I'm definitely a spongy, empathy person. So it's really practical and wise, really, to just stop, take a minute, breathe, get into the body as well. And that's the reason why I recommend the hands facing down, because, traditionally, a lot of people have that thing in their head where when we're meditating, we bring the index finger and the thumb together. But actually, it's not always what's needed. Sometimes you need to just be in touch with you, not necessarily be in the receptive state of the bigger sort of universal om, which is beautiful. But when we're looking at our own power, we need to start with the self.
So. I completely agree. I do chakra yoga once a week, and that's exactly what you say. In other, because I do yoga quite an intensive level, but other practices is like when you go in meditation, is the palm towards the sky, like we said, and then chakra yoga is like really to use your hands and the energy as a healer to release the different chakras. And that was like, so it's still very empowering for me every session, and I really like it. I need to do it, otherwise I get, my week is like upside down. Very important.
That area for business women, because we were looking at, for those of us listening that are perhaps yogins or enjoy yoga, we were looking at the Svadhisthana chakra, then the joy center. So it, without that, as creatives, we kind of wither away and die. And I think we tend to overestimate our will to kind of carry us through. But really, that sense of pleasure and joy needs to be in there as well.
Exactly. I completely agree. On the note of the advice and your rituals, and is there any advice you would like to share? Like, maybe this could be even a little bit more practical or inspirational for all the women that are listening to us today, even men, because there are some men listening to this podcast as well. And that, it's just, an advice from your heart for them.
I think, be gentle with yourself and with others, because I think we sometimes focus on, there's a massive self-love movement happening at the moment, and some of us can't relate to that. We can't relate to the term self-love, or we can't relate to the idea of this meta concept of loving kindness, that we talk about in yoga, for example. We see it almost as a very removed thing. And the most simple thing to do is just to be kind with yourself by accepting where you are at any given time. Because think of it this way, the quicker you embrace where you are, the quicker you can move out of it if it's not what you want. But you can't, and if it affects every area of your life when you are not being tolerant enough with yourself, when you're not sort of reparenting, re-nurturing, rewiring those areas of you that need it, we become judge and juror and executioner to everyone else. So starting from the self is a good thing, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to go on. I shouldn't be saying this because I'm about to run a course, but it doesn't mean that we need to go on a retreat or a, to the wherever we're going to absorb more knowledge. It does mean, though, that we need space to just allow ourselves to be and see how we develop from there, rather than this obsession with how much we can do in how little time. So I think just the slow down advice, the pandemic was here for a reason. It taught us some massive lessons. So I think let's not reduce that to a circumstantial performative box ticking exercise either. Let's make that part of our lives so that, everything comes from a more authentic place.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. Do you remember how we started? What is that you're fighting for? So, to wrap up this really amazing conversation we had today, I want to ask you, what is that you wish to stop fighting for?
I think I want to stop fighting for women to be seen and heard for the entirety of who they are. I can't say it in any other way, I think.
I think it's perfect, just like this.
Super.
Make completely sense after everything we said to now. So we when power will support you in this fight somehow by sharing your story as a start. And I want to thank you again for being with all of us here today and share your experience, inspire us, make us feel a little bit more grounded. And anything else you would like to share with our audience, where to find you, any upcoming program you have or something like breaking news.
Well, I would love to invite people to come across to the website, which is www.differentwomenproject.co.uk, and just have a rummage around, have a look at, you can find my story there if you'd like to see, if you're a reader, someone that likes to read. And you can also see the programs that we offer, because I'm always so interested in making new connections in the community, running workshops. And obviously we also have the Warrior Women Like Me program, which is just so can be so transformative for people. I mean, the last time we ran it, we did a 3-month program and an event with a theater, and they've come away hiring a year later their first artistic director who's a woman of color. So it works. And if you would like it to work for you, please head on over to the website and just drop me a line. I'm always really open to hear what people would like to see. All our work is bespoke, and we're just waiting for you to get in touch.
If this was your first time listening to Wempower Podcast, thank you for taking the time. You can find us on Podbean and Spotify. Subscribe to our newsletter on wempower.co and keep up to date with all the future projects on all our social media at Wempower UK. Thank you to all the women out there that are following and supporting Wempower. I will continue to bring to you powerful, inspiring and positive stories from all over the world. Don't forget, together we empower women. This is Ilaria for Wempower Podcast. Until next time.